Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
So I want to begin today with a quick follow-up from the story of the migrant caravan, which I did promise if somebody were to send me some information to justify the claims being made about a particular person or entity being involved in this, I would absolutely report on it. And as always, that's exactly what I hope is to get people out there watching the show to help send in information and things that we may not yet see. And in regard to that, somebody did in fact send me an image, and this has been reported on over the last day and a half by a couple of different places, of in fact a truck being used to move these migrants that apparently has a Star of David on it, which you can see here for yourself. And I did actually follow up with this and find some moving shots of this that with people moving in front of it and by it, which suggests that it's not photoshopped. Anything's possible. But that being said, this doesn't surprise me. But the reason I wanted to quickly start with this and point this out is to first show that it's important that we find things like this that suggest the claims that we're making before we just take anyone's word for it. Now, on that note, I shouldn't need to point out that just because that's there does not inherently mean that Israel's behind the whole thing. That should go without saying from anybody with a truly objective view. There's any number of reasons that could be the case. That being said, this is certainly suspect. And I shouldn't need to point out for those that watch this channel the very obvious connections between Israel and the United States in regard to U.S. policy, which I point out relentlessly on this show. And of course, if the way I see this, if Israel's involved in any way, it's helping the United States create this so they can then militarize the border. That's my personal opinion. But outside of that, I don't see any real reason the Israelis would create this in the event that to negatively affect the United States. Certainly possible. Just based on the information we see, it's pretty clear the United States is working in tandem with Israel. So if Israel was behind this, it suggests that so is Trump. But that being said, it's open to interpretation, but I did find that picture to be interesting, and it's important that we seek out and find things like that that do support the information we find, I should say, by all the claims that are flying out around this story. Ultimately, this story is a lot of conjecture, a lot of claims being made about things we don't yet understand, seeming to ignore the really clear connection that the United States interventionist neocolonial policy in South America has to affect this kind of migration. That being said, I wanted to follow up with that because I promised that I would. And if anybody has any more information that suggests that, you know, supports that claim that Israel's somehow behind this, or that the United Nations is invading the United States as InfoWars continues to claim, I'm happy to report on it. That being said, to this point, it's always important that we get facts to back up our claims and that we continue to research this stuff, as I'm open to any possibility. The fact that Israel could be behind this is entirely possible and would not surprise me in the slightest with all the horrendous things that they do around the world. That being said, let's move on to some other stories of the day. The first one to begin with, one that I found to be very important, this entire story. Now, for sake of conversation, I'm going to continue to address him as Khashoggi simply because that's what's kind of the recognizable term. I've apparently been corrected by saying his name about four different times by five different people. Khashoggi, Khashoggi, all kinds of different claims or names, I should say. I know Khashoggi is not the correct pronunciation. That being said, I'm going to continue to say that because it's easy for people to recognize. This story is very important to me, and not just because it is at face value what we're seeing on the mainstream media, because I feel very strongly that there's something big here that we're not seeing. The reason that CNN is reporting on this story, the reason that mainstream entities are attacking the establishment connections between Saudi Arabia and the United States, there's something going on here that's relevant to report on, but not in any way that I feel is coming from the mainstream media, which is why we're going to get into this first story. This one coming from Moon of Alabama, entitled Khashoggi drama, a deal is no longer possible. Erdogan demands that Mohammed bin Salman goes, which is very, very interesting. This is something that the Turkey's influence in this whole situation cannot be underplayed, and also should in no way, shape, or form ever be trusted in regard to the information they claim they have until things have been seen. And point to fact, there is now information coming out about this story that we can actually see. Now, as this article starts, which I found to be very, very relevant, the Khashoggi saga continues to influence Middle East policies, which in such a quick, short sentence, in a lot of ways, completely sums up the entirety of the story. Maybe that's all this is about. Maybe this was all created and carried out to essentially swing Middle East policy one direction. Very possible. Now, on Friday, the Saudi regime admitted, as we reported, that Khashoggi was killed in its consulate in Istanbul. They admitted this. Now, since then, they have changed their story twice, and more times even before that, which is very suspect. It's also important to remember that the U.S., reportedly, even by the Washington Post, reported they had foreknowledge that Khashoggi was about to be killed, that his life was in danger, and did nothing, said nothing. Of course, that point is now completely obfuscated by the mainstream media entirely and left out of the entire story because it doesn't align with the current narrative, which should show you that mainstream coverage of this is highly suspect in and of itself. Now, the Saudis originally claimed that Khashoggi had left the consulate, which we know is a lie. They knew it was a lie as well, and they knowingly lied for a week. We now know why they essentially felt safe to make that claim. And this is suspect, interestingly, coming from CNN, they have a new Turkish story. Both the CNN and Turkish things reasons we should be doubting and suspect of these claims. Nonetheless, there is evidence and pictures to back it up. A story of a decoy, which was sent to out into public to make it look like Khashoggi had indeed left. And they provide pictures to prove it. The next related article coming from Zero Hedge, entitled, of course, CNN releases photo of Saudi, a double of Khashoggi, Turkey finds car belonging to consulate. Now, this story entirely is coming from CNN, coming from Turkish sources. So it's from CNN, from Turkish sources, there is mountains of reasons to be highly skeptical of what they're trying to accomplish here. That doesn't inherently make the information false. Right? That's important to understand. It doesn't mean that those pictures are fake. It doesn't mean that this isn't Saudis that were responsible. But we need to ask ourselves why CNN, a propaganda outlet that is simply reporting on things that are they're fed by the government, in almost all cases, why they're doing this. Interesting question. I don't know for sure. But that's important that we ask ourselves that. Now, the image that we're talking about here, you can see closely for yourself, is Khashoggi on the right, and a man by the name of Mustafa al-Madini Jamal Khashoggi on the left and Mustafa on the right. Now, as they report, one member of the 15-man team suspected in the death of Jamal Khashoggi dressed up in his clothes and was captured on surveillance cameras around Istanbul on the day the journalist was killed. This coming from a senior Turkish official reporting to CNN. Now, CNN has obtained exclusive law enforcement surveillance footage, they claim, part of the Turkish government's investigation, of course, part that they're continuing to hold back for God knows why, that appears to show that the man leaving the consulate by the back door was wearing Khashoggi's clothes, a fake beard, and glasses. Now, it shouldn't need to be pointed out that this is a If this is indeed what happened, a ridiculous botch-up job with a man that is clearly has more hair than Khashoggi and looks slightly like him. But honestly, I wouldn't put it past Saudi Arabia to do this kind of a terrible job. Now, a senior Turkish official told CNN that the video showed that Madini was brought to Istanbul in order to act like a body double, point blank. Which indeed I find to be relevant, if nothing else. Now, the author of this article writes that this further proves that the current official Saudi narrative of an unintentional and accidental killing during an interrogation gone wrong, or consequently a fistfight gone wrong, whichever story you want to go with that they've said over the last week, is false, given such pre-planned attempts to throw subsequent investigations off track. And to a certain degree, I completely agree with that logic. If they were planning to mislead investigations beforehand, they're clearly lying. Something is being covered up. But again, we have to ask ourselves why this is being reported by the people that it is. Now, Turkish state media has also reported a suspicious car belonging to the Saudi consulate, in fact, that has been found abandoned. The car, a black Mercedes, is said to match a car bearing diplomatic plates seen outside the Saudi consulate on the day of Khashoggi's disappearance, and police have searched for it since. Now, of course, this again is related to the concept that they're claiming that they were using this as a decoy to make it look like Khashoggi had left, parked his car, and then disappeared, which we know is fake. They've already gone back on that story and admitted that they disposed of his body with an outside collaborator that they refused to talk about. the U.S. involvement potentially right there, more than them refusing to even warn him that his life was in danger. Very suspect, this entire story. Now, bit by bit, the Turkish government continues to drip out more about this sorry tale. And it helps to keep the issue on the political agenda. It helps to keep us talking about it. That's how they work these things out. They continue to drip, drip, drip these pieces of information out, so we continue talking about it, like I'm talking about it right now. That, again, doesn't make it relevant, not relevant. However, it necessitates skepticism to why they want us looking in this direction, or more, better yet, why they want us looking at the places they want us looking. Many of the points we're talking about on this show are not things you'll hear on Fox News or CNN, and that's important to keep an objective view in all of this. Clearly, it seems pretty obvious that the Saudis were behind this, and that's Mood of Alabama makes that exact claim. Now, it's shockingly apparent here that something is amiss. What lead to change is Washington's continued relationship with Saudi Arabia, regardless of what happens. It's a partnership that is in no way beneficial to Americans or U.S. national interests, except it's beneficial when it comes to the military-industrial complex and U.S. arms sales. As Trump has continued to point out, President Trump himself has promised severe punishment if the Saudi government is found to have been involved in Khashoggi's murder, which we now know is the case. But he also took off the table, just completely off the table, any reduction in arms sales to prop up the murderous Saudi war on Yemen. So we'll punish them for their murder, but not when it regards our any kind of deal that we made to help them continue to bomb and kill other innocent people. Basically what he's saying. Now, it's all about jobs, according to President Trump. So the Saudi king killing of thousands upon thousands of Yemeni people can just carry on, apparently. They don't seem to care. As Ron Paul wrote today, some murders are more important than others, quite obviously. Now, as Moon of Alabama continues, no one seems to care how many Yemenis Mohammed bin Salman kills every single day. There was no harsh reaction when Mohammed bin Salman kidnapped the Lebanese prime minister, nor when he incarcerated nearly 400 princes and tortured them to steal their money. Why would anybody care about Khashoggi? He says, because that's how human psychology works. A quote that you've heard many times over the last so many weeks: the death of one man is a tragedy. The death of millions is a statistic. This is coming from Joseph Stalin. We humans care way more for a single person that we know than for a mass of people we don't have any real relation with. Khashoggi was a personal friend of Erdogan. He was a columnist of the Washington Post, and apparently the CIA's most favorite outlet. And person, mind you, as we know that there are CIA connections to Khashoggi himself. Now, Mohammed bin Salman is an enemy of both, as Moon of Alabama puts it. Now, which is interesting, because this is where I slightly diverge from maybe where I think this logic is going, because I question whether these groups are more loyal to the hand that feeds them more so than people that they attack politically. He clearly feels that they have a motivation to call this stuff out, and in that regard makes what CNN and Washington Post are doing actually aligning with the interest of what's the greater good. Not because they want to do what's the good for the people, but because it actually aligns with their political interest, because sometimes those things just happen to align. Now, neither the neocon opinion editor of the Post, Fred Hyatt, nor Erdogan have any love for the Saudi crown prince, as he puts it. They would, of course, raise a ruckus when given such a chance, which is an interesting opinion. As he says, they will pile on and air the Saudis' dirty linens until MBS is gone, which is what they want, as he claims. Yesterday, the New York Times exposed the Twitter brigades the Saudis hired to manipulate the public, which is aligned with what he's saying, and I agree. That's a very interesting point. They apparently have pulled the curtain back about the Saudi troll factory that is influencing even our elections. And as we recently pointed out, that one of the princes of Saudi Arabia has more stock in Twitter than Jack. It's showing you very clearly that there is an influence here. But why it was allowed to happen, and ignoring the fact that the U.S. has just as many propaganda tools out there, are interesting points to also point out. But this story I find to be incredibly relevant. But then he says also today, the Washington Post has a detailed report of Saudi influence peddling through U.S. think tanks. Again, things you wouldn't think they would be exposing, knowing Donald Trump specifically and the U.S. oligarchy generally connected with these groups. The Middle East Institute, CSIS, and Brookings are getting called out. Lobbyists for the Saudis are canceling their contracts. He theorizes that we'll see many more reports like this coming out. Is Moon of Alabama correct? I mean, is this what we're seeing? Are we actually seeing this once-in-a-lifetime alignment of these propaganda rags that are aligning with what we see as what's likely, what's best to expose the reality of this horrible relationship? Or is there something bigger going on? I ultimately don't know. But it's something we need to continue being keeping track of and being wildly skeptical of. But nonetheless, what we're seeing here, for whatever reason, it's being obfuscated, covered up, changed, manipulated. And the lack of follow-up with, clearly the Saudis are not getting any kind of repercussions, maybe, but I doubt it will happen. My guess right now, we'll see nothing happen, and the arms sales and the groups and the Yemen killings will continue. But what he's saying does hold water, and it's very interesting to see. Now, in a direct relation to this, a story coming from South Front showing exactly what he's talking about, entitled Germany Halts Arms Exports to Saudi Arabia in Response to Assassination of Journalist and Saudi Consulate in Istanbul. Showing you again that this kind of thing does happen. Now, this doesn't mean that Germany cares about the life of the journalist or cares about the Yemenis, which clearly they didn't halt their arms sales to Saudi Arabia when they killed a bus full of children. No, no, no. When they have one man that gets lots of attention, then we need to do this. It's political. And that's what we need to see. That it's always political. But regardless of the fact that they're following their political interest, it just so happens to align with what we feel is moral and correct. Rare that it happens, but it does happen from time to time. And the more that we put this out, this kind of thing will happen. And it does hurt the bad people out there, which is good. Now, on October 21st, German Chancellor Angela Merkel announced that Germany would stop arms exports to Saudi Arabia, quote, for the time being. Of course, right? Just temporarily while you guys are the bad guy and we just kind of distance ourselves from you guys. Now, the reason for this decisions are ultimately vague. Circumstances around the disappearance and killing for Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi are kind of the general concept that everybody can acknowledge. Now, according to Merkel, Riyadh had not put the full facts surrounding the death on the table, which it seems is kind of ridiculous now when they continue to admit that they're behind this and people pretend like, well, it's still kind of a foggy concept. We can't really pin down what happened. They admitted that what they did, they disposed of the body. At the end of the day, that's a crime. Now, October 22nd, German called on its EU partners to also stop selling arms to Saudi Arabia. Maybe just a show to make it look like they're on the side of good, but ultimately still a positive thing. Whether they actually do anything is the real question. Now, we already know, we reported this in a past show, that Merkel, Germany, had already passed a bill saying that they called on everybody to stop selling arms to Saudi Arabia until the war in Yemen was over. And then Merkel turned around and decided to continue selling arms anyway. So it really doesn't seem to matter for these elite, powerful people what the law says or what they agree upon. It's all about their political careers. Now, France, the UK, and others are dragging their feet, ultimately not sure where to land on this storm. I would say very clearly waiting for the United States and what Trump decides to do. And we'll have to see how that plays out. Of course, U.S. President Donald Trump called Saudi Arabia's removal of the two top officials and more than a dozen arrests a good first step. He said, quote, I think we're getting close to solving a very big problem, adding that he finds the Saudi explanation credible. Again, perfectly giving you insight to the fact that nothing is ultimately going to happen. Just dragging this out until they can create another event to pull your attention away. And they'll, oh, well, they did something. They arrested some people and it's all over. Trump also appeared to shift responsibility on Congress, interestingly, for the possible U.S. response, which is ridiculous when you know that he's continued to take it for himself and use executive orders to do all this stuff. But when it actually calls for some kind of a good response, please do something about these bad people. Oh, well, that's Congress's job. They need to do something, don't they? It's ridiculous how they pass the buck back and forth. Now, however, he did add that there were other things the U.S. could do that wouldn't involve, of course, jeopardizing economic deals with Saudi Arabia. Whatever those other things are, is to, who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But of course, regardless of whether these murderous regimes are killing people and, you know, crucifying people and beheading them and killing busfuls of children, as long as it doesn't jeopardize our economic deals with Saudi Arabia. But if Syria or Iran sneezes too hard in someone's direction, we'll bomb them. This is the hypocrisy of the day. Hopefully you're beginning to see that. What's interesting, however, is that it seems that most Americans, in fact, also acknowledge that Saudi Arabia is not really an ally of the United States. Now, understand, that doesn't mean that it's not an ally of the U.S. oligarchy, an ally of Donald Trump's administration, or the U.S. government in general. No, but they don't see it as an American ally. 4%, only 4% of Americans consider Saudi Arabia an ally. This coming from a YouGov poll that recently found this. I found this to be wildly relevant, that regardless of what the people want, which is kind of a running theme of our country today, the government does whatever it wants. Clearly because the military-industrial complex, the war machine, all the things they're doing, the U.S. arms sales that spread arms and terror around the world, that's what's most important. As Trump has made painfully clear, selling protection like a mobster for countries that want to buy their arms. And again, this is not hyperbole. This is literally what they've even said themselves more than once. Very interesting story in general. But let's move on to some other stories in regard to Syria, which I found very, very important. Now, this one coming from South Front as well, entitled U.S. Central Command says it has no problems with killing civilians in Syria, of course, if they're in ISIS-held areas. But who deems that? That we've talked about this before. All the people in this given area are enemy combatants. So when we bomb that whole area, everybody we kill is, of course, an enemy combatant, because we already deemed them all enemy combatants. Regardless of the fact that these areas are people's homes, where they lived before the war, before you sent in your ISIS-controlled extremists to take over. See how this works? So they send these people in that they funded, created, armed, stoked from the very beginning, and then bomb those areas and kill all the people involved and say, oh, well, they're in that ISIS area that we just created. So we had to kill them. It's okay. I mean, I'm being very blithe about this, but this is really what we're talking about. This is the reality of the situation, that they're now saying that it's okay. And the way that they discuss this story is quite disgusting. Now, on October 21st, the commander of CENTCOM, which is U.S. Central Command, Army General Joseph Votel, commented on a series of airstrikes on the mosque in the village of Al-Suza in the southeastern Deir Azur countryside. That very same area we just touched on the other day, showing that little sliver of gray that's tucked neatly into the U.S.-controlled area. Now, this took place last week and reportedly resulted in the killing of at least 46 civilians. 46 civilians. You don't hear this on the news. They don't talk about this because these people aren't friends of the United States. Shows you how much, they really care about these civilian lives. Now, according to the Associated Press, he said that he's very satisfied by the actions of the U.S.-led coalition. Said, quote, the determination that was made by the leadership on the ground that this mosque was not being used as a mosque. This is what he told reporters traveling with him to Qatar. And he said, these aren't hastily made decisions. The dozens of killed civilians were confirmed, however, by both pro-Damascus and pro-opposition sources. On October 15th, Amnesty International released a report slamming the coalition for its denials of civilian deaths during its operations in the city of Raqqa. He said, quote, or they said, Amnesty International, quote, disturbingly, the Pentagon does not even seem willing to offer an apology for the hundreds of civilians killed in the war of annihilation on Raqqa. This is an insult to families who, after suffering the brutality of ISIS rule, which I would put completely with the backing of the United States, as we've demonstrated numerous times, lost loved ones to the coalition's cataclysmic barrage of firepower. This coming from the Amnesty International's new Secretary General. Now, in light of the recent remarks by the coalition and Army General Votel, excuse me, show that the Washington establishment is still not interested in the truth and will not move to admit the real civilian death toll that's taking place in all these countries that we pointed out repeatedly. But the fact that they're okay with 46 people dying because they're in that area that we've already deemed an ISIS-held area, and good job for them for doing that, is staggering. The blithe attitude towards human life, it needs to show us the real effort taking place here. Whether these people actually convince themselves it's for a greater good or they just simply don't care, no one should have the ability to simply wipe these people off the map and just say, well, it's because they're in a bad area, which we created consequently, but we'll forget about that for the time being. Something we have to begin to put out there. And I know more people are waking up to it. I know that. In my heart, I know that. But they don't want you to see that. They'll do everything in their power to keep you from feeling like you're gaining any traction, like people are waking up at all. And consequently, do everything they can to grab those people already awake and sweep them back into some new manipulation, which are coming up every single day. Maybe Khashoggi is one of them. Who ultimately knows? Now, in a directly related story, also coming from Moon of Alabama, about this very area that we're talking about, this entitled, U.S. Again only pretends to fight ISIS, which should cast a long shadow on the story we just covered. Only pretending to fight ISIS while they kill those civilians. Think about that. This little sliver here is the area that we are discussing, the Deir ez-Zor area. Now, the U.S. occupation force and its Kurdish proxy, the SDF, also, you know, moderate terrorists, these people are extremists in their own right, in northeastern Syria, are supposed to fight the Islamic State in its last holdout northeast of the Euphrates, which is that area we're talking about. But the operations against the handful of towns ISIS still holds, launched only after a long and unexplained delays, shows basically no progress. Last week, it received serious setbacks. After several days of sandstorms, hindered U.S. air support, ISIS counterattacked on October 11th against the U.S.-led SDF. And we reported on this recently. Some 130 refugee families with about 700 people were taken prisoner and brought to Hajin, a small city at the northern end of the ISIS-held area. Though local tribe elders ISIS requested to negotiate with, through local tribe elders that ISIS requested to negotiate with the U.S. coalition about this exchange of the prisoners, it also demanded medical and food supplies in exchange for 90 captured women it held isolated from their families. The request, of course, was just rejected. ISIS now threatens to kill 10 of the abductees per day unless its demands are fulfilled, which we also recently reported on. ISIS published photos, even, of an execution of 5 local men accused of being spies for the SDF. Now, this is not a secret. This is something that's been reported on. We've been talking about it. It's not something that's even disputed, but this is something the U.S. and its lapdog media seem all too happy to completely ignore. Quite clear how much they care about civilian lives. As I understand it, there's U.S. people there and even European EU people there. And the U.S. and its lapdog media just completely ignore this story as they're currently threatening to murder more people. The real point in regard to this ISIS stronghold, this area we're talking about, is that despite repeated claims of fighting ISIS in general and claims of Western-backed bombing campaigns and efforts to fight ISIS, which is what they're continuing to put out, during 5.5 months, ISIS only lost some 5 miles of territory at the northern and southern ends of this small area that you're looking at. How come the well-supplied Kurdish forces under the direction of U.S. Special Forces and with strong artillery and air support are not able to achieve more against some 1,000-2,000 jihadists who lack heavy weapons and have no way to resupply? Ask yourself that. Of course, Russian sources accused the U.S. outright of not seriously fighting its opponent. They say, quote, "The imitation of the fight against terrorists in this region of Syria has been going on for more than 6 months and has been used by Washington to justify its illegal presence in this country." Sounds exactly like what we've been saying, because it's true as I see it. As always, come to your own opinion. Don't just take my word for it. Do your research. And it's almost impossible to ignore the fact that the United States has repeatedly protected this area, fought against Syrian troops as they directly tried to fight ISIS, the group that the United States claims to be trying to fight. Now, the last 4 weekly summaries list a total of 349 strikes and 546 engagements, but none of these seem to have any effect on the ISIS numbers or capabilities or this area that you're currently looking at. Despite the high strike number, there's basically zero progress on the ground. This area has been here from the beginning. And we need to begin to see the absurdity of how they're allowing this to continue to justify their presence. The U.S. seems essentially only interested in keeping ISIS alive as long as it's possible and, you know, just to kind of let them thrive and attack Syrian troops and use that presence as a pretext for all other purposes. At last striving grasp, they can say, well, we're here to fight this group here still, so we can't just leave our illegal occupation of Syria. It's quite apparent what's going on here, if you truly have the eyes to see the facts that are sitting right in front of you. And don't just blindly listen to the propaganda coming from known career liars from decades ago. The very same people, mind you. Many of them involved in Iraq and all the same lies that we've known about for a very long time. Now, moving on to the final story for some domestic policy. This one I found to be very interesting, coming from RT, that The story itself could essentially be true, but something screams about manipulation here. Maybe about something that's about to happen or something that did happen. Who ultimately knows? But apparently, NYPD suspends body cameras for cops after device explodes. How interesting. Yeah, let's just get rid of all the cameras because, you know, a battery popped and somebody freaked out. And let's make sure that these cameras don't blow up and kill our... This is a dramatic overreaction. This is an excuse, in my opinion, being used to get rid of something that they all clearly do not want, which is accountability. Now, the New York Police Department has suspended the use of almost 3,000 body cameras after one exploded. And I would be willing to argue the term exploded itself is a drastic overdramatization. Court apparently leaving some of the city's police force unrecorded for the unforeseeable future. That's an alarming thought with all the things that we constantly talk about. An NYPD officer noticed smoke apparently rising from his camera on Saturday, and he took it off before it exploded. Now, I'd be really curious to see what exploded means in this regard. Nobody was injured in the incident, but the department instructed all officers, of course, immediately, and all officers equipped with this model to get rid of their cameras immediately, return to the precinct. They said, quote, "Nothing is more important than the safety of our officers." Of course, apparently not even civilian lives. And it goes on to say, "And equipping the NYPD with the best equipment is a paramount priority." This coming from the NYPD. The department believes that a battery malfunction caused the device to explode. Now, ask yourself, anybody that is intelligent enough to understand the power that's in a battery, ask yourself, what's the largest explosion you can make with a battery? And I'm talking a battery that goes inside of a small camera. Think about that. Like doing your best effort to make an explosion. What's the largest explosion you could make? And would it ever potentially put anybody's life at threat? No. I mean, that's my opinion. Feel free to challenge that. This seems like a constructed story, and I think this is patently ridiculous, personally. Officers with the older model, point of fact, will continue to wear the cameras. But of course, they leave out how many that would be. Probably maybe not that many. Now, after the weekend's malfunction, almost 3,000 officers will hit the streets unrecorded. However, according to complaint records and national studies, apparently little will even change. One study conducted in Washington, D.C. and released last year found that officers wearing cameras still received about the same amount of civilian complaints as officers who didn't. Which in my eyes just shows you that they just didn't really care or weren't aware enough of how these things worked or however you want to look at it. But the real point is that it has in fact made a major difference in regard to some powerful cases. Revealing police officers planting drugs on people. Revealing police officers shooting people in the back. Things that were relevant to the real intricacies of how these things operated before we had a camera to expose them. And that is what's most important. They're talking about civilian complaints, people complaining about little things. To me, that's not the biggest story here. But knowing that they don't have anything watching them now is quite alarming, especially in New York City. But you could take this story for what you will, research it. If you find something new, please let me know. I'd love to see something about how, like a breakdown of how the battery in this thing could not possibly even cause an explosion. I would love to put that out there. But nonetheless, found to be relevant. Now, I want to end today with a caption from Ron Paul in an article he put out today, specifically in regard to Khashoggi in Saudi Arabia. But when you hear what he's saying, think about this in regard to everything we talk about, to U.S. foreign policy, to Iran, to Syria, to everything that we know that the U.S. has been behind and is currently trying to accomplish. He ends by saying, "This entangled relationship with Saudi Arabia should end. It is unfortunate that the tens of thousands of civilians dead from Yemen to Syria due to Saudi aggression don't matter as much as the murder of one establishment journalist like Khashoggi. But as the one Clinton Flack once said, we should not let this current crisis go to waste." Which, what I take that as, I think that was a very wise thing to say in regard to ourselves. That regardless of how the story is being used or what it is, the lies behind it, or even if it's trying to manipulate us, it's exposing the corruption of a very, very corrupt government. And we should use that to benefit what we know is the truth and not use it in a malicious way, not use it in a disingenuous way, but use it as the truth and present these facts as we see them to expose the truth and hopefully shine some light on what's happening in Yemen. That's how I see it. And I agree with that, Ron Paul. We should not let this crisis go to waste. He goes on to say, this is not about demanding that the Saudis change their ways, reform their society on the lines of a liberal democracy, or allow more women to drive. The problem with our relationship with Saudi Arabia is not about Saudi Arabia. It's about us. The United States should not be in the business of selling security guarantees overseas to the highest bidder, which by Trump's own admission is exactly what we're doing with South Korea, with Saudi Arabia, with any number of countries he's threatened to revoke his protection. Repeat that. The United States should not be in the business of selling security guarantees overseas to the highest bidder, which has nothing to do with the best interests of Americans. He goes on to say, we are constantly told that the U.S. military guarantees our own safety, and so it should be. Which I just had this argument the other day with somebody as well. That's clearly not what the U.S. military is for today, as it's overseas invading countries. He says, no, this is about returning to a foreign policy that seeks friendship and trade with all nations who seek the same. But that heeds the warning of George Washington in his farewell address that, quote, a passionate achievement of one nation for another produces a variety of evils. If we care about the United States, we must heed this warning. No more passionate attachments overseas. Friendship and trade overall. Very wise words, as always. Ron Paul may, in my eyes, be a little bit tied in to a system that I see is broken. He has great hope that we can revive this country within the broken system. I, however, do not. But I feel in my heart that he has the best interest and that his intent is pure. And he truly wants the best for the American people. You may disagree with that, and I know some do. But you cannot deny the validity of those words. So think about that. Reflect on everything we're talking about with a skeptical eye. Whether that be the caravan of migrants, whether that be the Khashoggi story, with a lens of skepticism. And don't just follow one story or the other just because one point suggests that it may be the truth. Even though I have my opinions as well, and they likely align with yours, I still need to be objective and hold back and wait for more. As we all should, because that's the responsible thing to do, and we must be better, as I always say. Thank you for tuning in today. Make sure you stay tuned following the show for T-Lab Research and Review, where we will continue for an hour or so talking about whatever else, whatever you want to ask me, whatever. And I actually want to follow up on some of these stories specifically and talk more about the intricacies of them. So stay tuned. I'd like to see you there. And make sure you check out truthclothing.io/T-Lab. To get yourself a Question Everything t-shirt if you'd like to continue supporting this show and help us continue to do what we're doing, which is spread truth, fighting for the truth, fighting for you. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.